For over half a century, London W12-7RJ Wood Lane became the spiritual home of British television. Designed by the architect Graham Dawbarn, this was the UK's first purpose-built TV hub with the cutting-edge camera technology, 8 bespoke studios, production galleries, and the now legendary BBC bar. Well, for many, BBC Television Centre came to represent the magic and glamour of British entertainment, light entertainment, glossy, glamorous shows, and hosted everything from Auntie's New Bloomers to Z Cars behind those famous double doors. To mark 10 years since the closure of Britain's most famous television studios, Beyond the Title welcomes some of the BBC's best-loved faces to remember and celebrate the history and legacy of TV's first dream factory. So, join Josh and the team as they remember BBC Television Centre.
For this special podcast, we've spoken to Anthea Turner, Ben Elton, Bobby Warrens, Colin Edmonds, Gabby Roslin, Graham McCann, Jeff Stevenson, John Coleshaw, Julian Dutton, Louis Barth, Mike Dixon, Paul Jackson and Philip Schofield, all about the magic and legacy of the Television Centre.
I don't think there's another building, probably in the world, that has as much history and conjures as many thoughts, memories as Television Centre. The first time I ever saw it was in a Penguin book of TV, which I had as a kid. And it showed the layout of the studios and the shape of it in that brilliant question mark, because the architect had wondered what shape he would build it and just wrote a question mark on a piece of paper and thought, oh yeah, that'll do. It's one of those buildings that I fantasized about walking around being in when I got a job at the age of 17. Broadcasting house, funnily enough, as a radio outside broadcast bookings clerk, I got on the tube, realised my pass actually also worked at Television Centre, and spent a day wandering around this fantasy building. As I walked down Wood Lane and it appeared in front of me, I literally couldn't believe my eyes. So over the years, I spent many, many happy hours in that building. Saturday morning TV and the broom cupboard and all the other things that I've done in there, Test the Nation, Latter Days, the Soap Awards. And I was always thrilled whenever a job came up and it was in that building. And obviously, you know, in the sort of late 80s, early 90s, it was like our building. We were in it every day, all over it, showing behind the scenes, using every bit. I explored every inch of the place. And so when it closed down, I was completely gutted. And who would have thought that all those years later, when ITV decided they were going to move this morning and looking for another studio, they would settle on Television Centre. And so we are now in Studio 3, you know, home of, I think they shot, oh God, good gracious, countless dramas, Blue Peters, Fawlty Towers, you know, but you name it, you know, all in there. And here we are now in Studio 3. It has a unique, almost electric smell in it, but that might just be in my own head. But for me, it's a purpose-built TV complex. There's only 3 studios now of the original 8, but that's enough for me. The fact that I can still drive in through the gates and still see that big wall of Studio 1 with Television Centre written on the side of it and that iconic donut. The fact that that still exists makes me extremely happy. Of all the TV studios I've worked in all over the world, Television Centre is the one that works the best. It was the best designed. It was designed by someone who understood telly. So many of them now are just a bit corporate, just a bit too much glass, just a bit too drafty and windy and occasionally bleak. So Television Centre has that incredible history, incredible warmth, a rich, rich tapestry of shows and stars have all passed through it. And I'm very, very pleased that I still get to go in through those gates every morning.
had lovely, happy memories. My one fabulous memory when I was doing a Somerset Maugham series called Rain, and I was sitting in the Green Assembly at Television Centre having a quiet cup of coffee when lovely Renée Houston, who's a fabulous actress, came in her white white tuxedo suit, and she said to me, "Hello, Bobby." She said, "How are you? I'm playing an old Leslie tonight." Well, of course, in 1969, I didn't know what an old Leslie meant, but she was fabulous, fabulous. So, you know, I've had lovely memories, lovely memories.
When I was a teenager in the 1970s, TVC, Television Centre, was the home of dreams. With a few rare regional exceptions, every single important studio-based TV show the BBC made from the 60s to the noughties was made there. I first went when we made the pilot of The Young Ones in January 1982, and I couldn't believe that I was actually working in the place where they'd made Morecambe and Wise, Dad's Army, Python, 40 Towers, Top of the Pops. I never lost the sense of complete magic of that great ring of studios in all the many years I was lucky enough to work there. We made The Young Ones, Blackadder and The Thin Blue Line, and also my own stand-up series, The Man from Auntie and The Ben Elton Show. The dressing rooms and old-fashioned coffee bars called Assemblies and colour-coded never changed. Nothing changed. It was always the same for 40 years and always throbbing with excitement. And then they closed it and sold off the single greatest production house in the country. An appalling, short-sighted crime against culture. Posh flats and a private members club have replaced the home of dreams where Eric and Ernie danced, Slade sang Merry Christmas Everybody, and Captain Mannering said, "Stupid boy, Pike." So sad.
TV Centre. Oh, BBC TV Centre. Great memories. I used to do the warm-ups every Saturday afternoon on a live show called The Late Late Breakfast Show, and I'd drive in. And it was just so exciting. It was just such a great place to be in. And I'd be back on the Sunday doing the sitcoms, doing the warm-ups for the sitcoms for Only Fools and Horses, Terry and June. Oh, just loads and loads. Sickness and Health. And it was just brilliant. It was always loads of big star names around the place, all chatting, having a cup of coffee in between shows and what have you. It was just brilliant. Really, lots and lots of happy memories. It was, I used to call it an entertainment factory because it just used to, just used to churn out loads and loads of great entertainment. You never knew who you were going to bump into. If you got a job doing the warm-ups or doing a show at the Beeb, you would always bump into other people and other people in the business. And it was a great place. And I miss it. And when I see it now, when I walk past, I go to, Westfield's shopping centre or go to QPR's, I do every other week when I'm home. I look at the TV centre and I just think, great memories. And what a shame that they didn't really leave it as it was. But there you go. We move on.
Hi, this is Paul Jackson. I worked at Television Centre for about 15 years in two bursts in the 70s and the 90s, and I had some of the best possible times there. I was a runner and then a producer and director, and then I was controller of the entertainment department, and all that time my office was in the Television Centre, the BBC Television Centre, and it was just the most fabulous place. You walked in there in the morning. On the ground floor there were those eight studios, TC1 to 8. TC1 was one of the biggest studios in the country. Massive entertainment studio. I saw all kinds of stars recording there. And then right the way around to TC8, which was another big studio where all of the Two Ronnies, I think virtually all of the Two Ronnie shows were recorded. And you walk in the morning and there'd be Play School and a sitcom, Live of Birds or Till Death. There'd be an entertainment show. On a Saturday night when I was controller of the department, I could go down on the Saturday afternoon, watch Noel's House Party ready to go live in one studio, and next door, The Lottery, with all kinds of famous stars coming in and out in the next door studio. So I loved the Television Centre, and I was lucky enough to watch it being built because my dad used to work for the BBC, and his original offices were in Lime Grove, but when they built the television centre, he was there and he moved in very early on, in fact so early that the builders were still around. And when I went to try and see him once, I was shooed off by the builders, who didn't believe that I was coming in to meet my dad. So, big happy memories for me. I'm sure it's lovely and thriving the way it is at the moment, but it'll never be telecentre again. What a wonderful place. As the memo famously said, this is not a place of entertainment. Well, I'm afraid it most certainly was, and for the whole nation benefited by that great entertainment. Happy birthday, TBC.
Hi there, Josh. Thank you very much for asking me to contribute to your podcast, Beyond the Title, and talk about Television Centre. I can't actually believe it's 10 years since it closed down as Television Centre, and I know a little bit of it is still open. And I was there that day. In fact, we did the final Blue Peter from there, and I came back as a guest together with Diane Louise Jordan, and I remember doing something with hula hoops. I think, yeah, we were trying to do the Guinness Book of Records hula hoop challenge right in the middle of what has always affectionately been called the donut. And anybody who's not been to Television Centre will maybe not know that it is built in a circle. And we used to say that Television Centre was built in a circle, so the rumours went round faster back in the day. But I do remember arriving at Television Centre. I was doing, at the time, Top of the Pops, and later, obviously, I went on to do Blue Peter there and a National Lottery and a host of other television programmes. So it really was a very special place, and it will always be a special place in my heart. It was like entering this sort of world of television, this factory of television, and it'll never happen again in this country, because it was a place where you had small props, big props, you had the makeup rooms, you had the costume rooms, you had rooms where you could go and get something mended, you had, and then obviously they used to look after everybody so well. So, you know, you had the accountancy room, so you could go in and sort out, you know, your contracts and things. And then you had, you know, coffee rooms, you had, you know, your lunch meeting place. I mean, just the whole place you walked into, and it was the centre of television. And I always remember the other thing as well, which was very special, is they always had these lovely commissionaires on the gate, and they were often ex-servicemen. And they would get to know who everybody was, and you were greeted beautifully. Oh, hello there, Anthea. How are you? What are you doing today? And it was all very personal. And there was the circle, and then there was the outside of the circle where all the scenery was, the scenery docks. And you could walk around that scenery dock, and you'd see Daleks, and you'd see things from Noel's house party, and all the big entertainment programs, and you know, the Generation Game, things like that. And you literally, you could keep walking, and you would see all their scenery. And then, of course, there was the Blue Peter Garden, which was a proper garden. And even when Blue Peter weren't working in the garden and using it as a set, people used to go and sit and have their lunch in it. So it was a proper garden. And you, from where the canteen was, you looked out onto the garden. So it was a magical place. We will never see it like that ever again. It was big, but not that big, really. You felt like, well, I was in my early 20s when I first got there, and I honestly thought I'd arrived. This was it. This was the centre of television excellence. And doing Blue Peter there was like, I think, and I always say this to people when they said, what was it really like? And I go, it's like, Blue Peter's like entering the University of Television. If you can do that, you can do anything. So thank you very much for inviting me to give these little words here and memories of Television Centre, because it holds a beautiful place in my heart.
Well, every actor's first love, I think, is theatre, and including myself. And when you arrive at BBC TV Centre, and I remember the very first time I did, it would have been way back in the 80s, it is a huge theatre, effectively. It's got exactly the same things as a huge theatre, with scenery, props, stagehands, costume, wardrobes, makeup artists. And so there's no difference, except there are these huge things called cameras stuck in front of the audience. So it is an amazing place, and I remember early memories of Television Centre when I began acting, being in a couple of the police series, and just being blown away by it all. It is quite intimidating. I mean, there are these huge sections of it called, I think it was called the Blue Zone and the Green Zone. So it's quite a little, it's quite sort of Big Brotherish in a way. But for all that, it is so impressive when you first encounter it. And as a comedy writer and performer, I had to go to Television Centre over the years, from the early 90s, I think it was. I wrote for Children in Need in, I think it was 1992, when the great Terry Wogan was presenting, of course. And I remember all of us comedy writers advancing into the foyer, and it was just chock-a-block with all the stars and all the sort of costumed, you know, charity runners and charity people. And I think there was even a horse in the foyer of Television Centre. Just, I think it was a Shire horse, just clip-clopping slowly across the foyer. And it was like being in Fantasyland. It was a sort of Disneyland atmosphere. I remember another early memory of Television Centre was seeing a Dalek being carried along a corridor by two stagehands, studio hands rather, and just like a sort of a patient in a hospital. And that was simply hysterical. And I worked on many TV shows over the years in TV Centre, particularly in the children's CBBC department, which was in they had their own tower. I think it was called the East Tower. And it was a wonderful atmosphere, absolutely wonderful. The thing about TV Centre was that it was always buzzing with creativity and activity. It was like a huge beehive, an artistic beehive. And you knew that everyone was locked in with the same goal. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of people teeming around this vast television empire. And they were all focused on one goal, to make good programmes. And programmes were made and lost, and victories were won in the BBC canteen, the famous canteen. The sixth floor was the BBC comedy department, so that was quite well known to me. And over the years I worked on quite a few pilots there. And I was pleased to learn that the sixth floor had been the comedy department for years and years and years. So what was great about TV Centre is it didn't seem to change. Until, obviously, the working practices of producers and everything changed in the 90s with John Burt. But the atmosphere of the building never changed. I worked on many wonderful shows for children's TV, CBBC, Chucklevision, Scoop. And there was always this great atmosphere of slight anarchy about children's television. The goal of children's TV was just to have fun. And that was very infectious. So that part of TV Centre has always got warm memories for me. Other memorable occasions, I remember being in the BBC canteen, having a Chucklevision conference, or I was actually writing with somebody else, and John Sargent, the journalist, resigned from Strictly Come Dancing. I can't remember the year, but it was some years ago. But this was a huge thing, and he held a huge press conference in the BBC canteen. And there were hundreds of reporters there. I think there were even sort of foreign TV stations that come over. So that was all very memorable. And being in the dressing rooms of TV Centre is another fantastic memory. Just imagining who had been in them over the years, in those amazing dressing rooms. So yes, very warm memories. And I'm glad it's still being partially used as a television centre. But of course, the heyday has gone, and I'm very, very privileged to have caught its last sort of 10, 15 years.
I remember going to BBC TV Centre as a very little girl. I was about 3 years old, and my dad was a continuity announcer there at Television Centre for BBC Two TV. And I used to go in holding his hand and imagining what it would be like one day for them to say, "Oh, Gabby Roslin, here's your dressing room." So the very first time I had my own dressing room there was for Children in Need. And when I arrived through the door, they said, "Oh, Gabby Roslin, and there's your dressing room." And I wandered down the corridor and I went into my dressing room and I burst into tears of excitement because it has been a childhood dream to always work in television. Television Centre is somewhere that I absolutely adored. And when I started doing loads of shows there, I used to walk in with such pride and such excitement every single time. It's wonderful that you're celebrating Television Centre. It really is. What a special place.
Mike Dixon, musical director here. So for years, I was watching all these incredible shows that came out of this amazing round building. And it was, I think, early 90s that I started doing some light entertainment shows as musical director in that very building. I remember the first feeling of walking in and this extraordinary sense of just simply, wow, I'm in these hallowed studios. But the one that was the most interesting for me was a little show called Call Up the Stars, which was a memorial for the end of the Second World War. And we did it in, I think it was April 1995, and we were in TC1. And I had to wear a wig because I had to look as if I was in the 1940s. And at that point in time, my hair was rather long. So I had to wear a wig as the conductor of the orchestra at the back of the stage. Hysterical. More importantly, the people that were in that show were icons of the light entertainment industry. Marty Kane, Max Bygraves, Ronnie Corbett, John Inman, Mike Yarwood, Sue Pollard, Maureen Lipman, and on top of that, people like Richard Stilgo, Peter Skellen, Samantha Janus, and Harry Enfield. Directed by John G. Croft and produced by Bill Cotton and John Fisher. It was an extraordinary couple of days us putting together this show. And I suppose it just highlights the amazing things that have gone on in that building.
Colin Edmonds, Television Centre. I was enormously lucky to have worked as a freelance light entertainment writer at BBC Television Centre over a period of, it must have been 40 years. I contributed to hundreds of shows recorded in that hallowed temple of television. And never once, you know, walking through those gates on Wood Lane, across the Horseshoe car park to reception, did I ever take it for granted, because that place for me was special. Worked long and hard to get through the doors. In Television Centre, TV shows were not only conceived and commissioned and produced and taped, it was also where they were broadcast. And in the case of recorded shows, they were also edited and dubbed. And in one single building. No outside facilities required, or technical crews, or production personnel. No. It's Television Centre provided the complete package, like no other building in the world. I remember sitting in Red Assembly, one of those ground floor tea bars, talking to a senior cameraman who told me that the iconic donut design was not only architecturally bold, it also served a practical and technical purpose, in that it was the most effective and efficient shape for the miles of cabling a new television facility required to drive 8 main studios and several smaller presentation units. Now, I'm no engineer, of course, but to me that made perfect sense. And in Television Centre over the years, I walked and sometimes ran around that circular corridor on the ground floor, past all those dressing rooms, and you'd often pass every imaginable famous face from public life and production legends whose names you'd see on the end roller of network television shows. Dennis Mayne Wilson, John Ammons, Stuart Morris, Michael Hurl, Kevin Bishop. These people had all produced my favourite shows when I was growing up watching television. It was in 1986, I remember, bumping into David Taylor, who I met when he directed the first series of a quiz show I worked on called Bob's Full House. Yeah, just the person, he said, just the person I want. Are you busy? And I said, I'm ticking over, David. So he said, do you want to help me out on the pilot of a game show I'm producing next week for Paul Daniels? Well, that game show turned out to be Every Second Counts, which ran for 142 episodes over 9 series. It was a purely chance meeting, bumped into him in the corridor, and that would never have happened outside that wonderful building, which became the model for television studios all over the world. It was a place that not only gave me a long and lovely career, is where I first met my future wife, Catherine, in 1985, in the old upstairs gallery of Studio TC6. I fondly remember that. So for me, it's not only a dear place to my heart personally, it's also impossible to overestimate the historic and cultural significance of the BBC Television Centre, a true national treasure.
BBC Television Centre was often described as a factory for making TV programmes. However, in a lot of ways, it was also a village, a self-sufficient community. It had shops, a pub, and people who made it run. Anything needed could be found or made on site. Costumes, sets, props. It was all just a phone call and a 10-minute walk away. As a factory, it was hellishly efficient. One day, a studio could be a Regency drawing room. The next, a French market square. The next, the setting for a tits and tinsel variety spectacular. Overnight, the floor could be washed and painted. One day it looked like floorboards, the next day it looked like cobbles. The next it was as shiny as a guardsman's boot. A whole show could live in a cage on the ring road surrounding the studios, ready for its moment under the lights. Everything made there, whatever the scale, from the weather in Prez A to the two Ronnies in TC1, was made with the same craft and care, even if the scripts weren't always. The crews and technicians would take everything equally seriously, but that didn't mean it couldn't also be fun. Indeed, that's the word that comes to mind when I think of Television Centre. It was the fun factory.
Michael Bentin had a very popular television programme on the BBC in the early 1960s called It's a Square World. It was particularly notable for its imaginative and inventive visual sequences. Many of these actually featured his many comical attempts to attack the BBC's own television centre, which sometimes involved breaking into it, burying it, or blasting it off into space. On one particularly memorable occasion, Bentin pretended to blow it up, using a small amount of explosives, which led to a slight charring of one of its walls. This incident prompted an angry memo from up on high in the BBC, informing Bentin, "Under no circumstances is the BBC Television Centre to be used for the purposes of entertainment." This is just one of the many eccentricities and contradictions of a place that for more than half a century served simultaneously as a creative arena, a factory floor, a Byzantine bureaucratic block, a meeting place, a hiding place, a school, a technical college, and a club. Television Centre brought so many diverse talents together, contained them within one place, and encouraged so much creative collaboration that saw countless memorable and sometimes groundbreaking programmes reach the screen and engage and entertain a large section of the nation. It trained people, from cameramen and sound technicians all the way through to producer directors and commissioning editors. It was a magnet for the imaginative, the artistic, and the ambitious, and a context for so many diverse and powerful visions. What I think it provided most of all was a sense of focus for communication and a sense of community for individual artists. Contrary to that memo that Michael Bentin received, therefore, the BBC's Television Centre was the best means of its time for the purposes of entertainment, and it ought to remain in the memory as an inspirational image for what collaborative creativity can achieve.
Hello and welcome to this very special podcast. We've never done anything like this before, so have absolutely no idea how this is going to go. It's not an interview or anything that you would normally associate with Beyond the Title because, for the first time ever, we're going rogue. And as you might have already worked out, I'm not Josh Barry. I'm writer and broadcaster Ian Lee. I stole some strawberries in the jungle once. I'm going to be reading Josh's thoughts for something that he's really passionate about. So from now on, I'm going to be saying Josh's words in the first person. Therefore, when I say I or me, I'm actually speaking on behalf of Josh. It sounds complicated, but hopefully you're going to get what I mean. Here we go. Over the next few weeks, Beyond the Title should be marking a whole decade since the closure of BBC Television Centre, with a host of stars who had a close relationship with Britain's first TV factory. But first, I thought I'd just give you my own opinion on this magical building in order to give you a bit of background on why I'm so passionate about it. After all, last time I looked, this was an entertainment podcast, not one celebrating the ancient art of architecture. I know absolutely nothing about the ancient art of architecture. I know nothing about architecture or feats of building excellence. Let's leave the DIY to Nick Knowles. Is that still going or am I hopelessly out of touch? I met Nick Knowles in an ice cream parlour once, but that's another story. It might be incredibly boring for you if I spent this entire podcast discussing the structural issues of the building, so I ain't going to do that. Instead, I'll try and explain why TV Centre is so important to me. Growing up with cerebral palsy, I quickly realised that I had to concentrate on the pastimes that I could physically undertake rather than worrying about what I couldn't, and watching television was something I could do absolutely independently. Television is almost universally accessible for everyone and allowed me to explore a world of glitz, glamour and creativity. It was like a magical world. Not like Narnia or Oz. This was a world which was almost attainable, and I think that's why it fascinated me so much. I loved everything from The Royal Variety, Blind Date and Children in Need to Noel's House Party. In fact, anything with a live studio audience and an accomplished entertainer at the helm. I'd found my sport, and it wasn't football, it wasn't computer games. My passion was light entertainment. I used to create TV studios out of cardboard boxes and used action figures to represent my favourite TV stars, who I used to play out fantasy shows from the cardboard boxes. I remember using the end of a Flymo box to create a miniature version of TC1 using a shedload of coloured paper which looked like the Here's One I Made Earlier section on Blue Peter. I'd spent hours and hours reenacting my favourite TV shows using these action figures to represent the stars with whom I was familiar with. So Television Centre always occupied a very significant part of my childhood. And although I obviously had no idea about the logistics of programme making, I still understood that this big factory in central London was the home of TV. And that was very exciting. I didn't know why, but live entertainment was something I always relished. It really blew my mind that the people who I was watching on the small box in the corner of our living room were actually presenting in real time and talking to me. I loved the colourful sets, the twinkling flashing lights, the array of people who I later would easily recognise and got increasingly familiar with. Shiny floor entertainment was what I loved, and most of it came from this enigmatic land called TV Centre, where I realised all of my favourite stars resided. Almost like one big fantasy house, where Terry Wogan lived with Gabby Roslin and held the keys to Top of the Pops. This was where it all happened, the absolute bedrock of TV. So at this point, you might be shouting at your laptop, smart speaker or similar device, "What the heck are you talking about? What the bloody hell is TV Centre? Or why does it matter?" Well, the shiny floor entertainment, which I was just talking about, wouldn't have been given the opportunity to shine if it wasn't for TV Centre. In fact, every BBC variety show, every studio-based BBC sitcom, and every musical extravaganza from the past 50 years came straight from here. Since 1960, this was essentially the official home of the BBC and helped to nurture some of Britain's biggest stars. Everyone wanted to work at TV Centre because it was the only venue which catered for all kinds of entertainment, from light entertainment, pop music, sports coverage and drama. What other building could cater for that many different disciplines?
It was our very own version of Hollywood and something to be extremely proud of. This is Ian Lee, just interrupting here. You may have heard my stomach rumble there. That's not in the script. That's me. That's not Josh. Right, I'm going back to being Josh now. And here we go. Describing the look of TV Centre to someone who knows nothing about it, there's a good chance that they might think you're on mind-altering drugs. It's a building in the shape of a donut with these massive white eggs on the side with a gigantic statue of a Greek god, Helios, running through the donut. People would look at you like you were insane. What other commercial building is perfectly spherical? A lot of people say that, despite working there for years, people were always getting lost and thinking they knew where they were going, but ending up where they started. But I believe this was the genius of TV Centre. I always think this would have been a small, humorous irritation for anyone that worked here, but something you grew to love. A bit like Arkwright's till in Open All Hours. It was annoying, but you grew to love it. And if it wasn't there, then people wouldn't have anything to moan about. That is the glory of being British. Its slightly eccentric features were much a part of the legend of the place than the programmes it made. 8 studios, production galleries, a whole floor dedicated to TV management, a canteen, and yes, a BBC bar. A bar. Only in Britain would we be celebrating the inclusion of a bar as an excellence in architectural design. Architect Graham Dorban had thought about everything as he shaped the building into the shape of a question mark, which was perfectly apt because it was always a bit of an enigma. But let's leave the specifics to the experts we're going to speak to over the next few weeks. I guess the important thing from this perspective was that everyone was together in one big creative building, which undoubtedly resulted in a golden era of British television. I'm often asked to pinpoint the differences between modern light entertainment and TV of the past, which is something very difficult to describe. Yet I believe one of the most obvious differences was those connections between performers and the ease and nature in which they collaborated, which was only possible if everyone was together in this creative palace. I would have loved to just walk around in the mid-70s and see Morecambe and Wise, Corbett and Barker, and Bruce Forsyth doing what they did best. You did really believe Ronnie Corbett when he complained about the poor food at the BBC canteen, or the bizarre behaviour of his producer in the corridors. It really was a dream factory managed by people who had a real passion for what they did, which had a real advantage to the quality of the output which it boasted. When we look back on this era, it's difficult to think of another time which was dominated by so many hugely talented and influential stars who set the benchmark for the succeeding generations to emulate. There must be some truth in that belief that when you gather talent and energy in one place, it gets stronger. And I believe this is what happened with TV Centre. This was where Morecambe and Wise brought some much-needed sunshine. Del Boy called Rodney a plonker, and Bruce Forsyth told us that life really was the name of the game. International movie stars, award-winning singer-songwriters, members of parliament, and royalty from time to time all entered the famous double doors at the front of the building, hoping for a suitable platform to shine, and TV Centre never failed to deliver. This was where Bill Cotton created the format for the music-based variety show, with a music star at the helm, which helped to launch the TV career of a certain Cilla Black. It was also where legendary music stars appeared in their very own TV special, many for the first time. In terms of entertainment, this was Mecca. Everything seemed to happen here. Although I'm far too young to have been alive during this magical period, I've researched it thoroughly. And through my research at university and beyond, I've been lucky enough to interview figures who were integral to making the place what it was. Almost everyone I've spoken to has waxed lyrical about how special this iconic landmark was, both in terms of their own careers and to TV as a whole. I always wanted to go and see the White Egg Cups for myself, which I achieved on a number of occasions. In 2001, my parents took me and my best mate Andy on the official TV Centre tour, which I absolutely loved. We got to visit Parky's dressing room and watched a recording of Tomorrow's World, presented by Adam Hart-Davies from the Top Gallery. Entering one dressing room, we were told this fascinating story about the pop legend Prince, who by all accounts refused to walk anywhere, even from his car to the studio, and demanded his bodyguard carried him everywhere to and from. I knew I always had a lot in common with Prince. To me, this was absolutely fascinating, and I could have stayed there all day just looking at every single aspect of production. And this was going on 365 days a year. I strongly remember going through the BBC corridor and being totally starstruck as the great Eamon Holmes was coming in the other direction. I remember thinking, you're Eamon Holmes. You're always on my TV and now I'm brushing past you in my wheelchair. If you're listening, Eamon, hope you're not freaked out, but wouldn't it be great if this led to Eamon coming on the podcast? Maybe we could start a Twitter campaign. The next time I returned to TV Centre was when my sister worked for an IT solutions company which had donated a significant amount to children in need and had been invited to attend the last night section of the legendary extravaganza, which took place in the prestigious TC1. For years I'd heard about the legend of TC1 and how many supremely talented individuals had graced that great stage. Someone, I forget who, possibly Michael Grade, once compared it to the enormity and prestige of the London Palladium, and I tend to agree. TV is full of visual tricks which use the concept of space to create the illusion that a studio is a theatre-sized space, when in reality, it's a shoebox. I've visited many studios and have been a bit underwhelmed by their size and enormity, or lack thereof. They just feel like rooms, but TC1 was vast, with the shape and feel of a theatre. It was literally like the BBC's very own London Palladium. It even had theatre-style chairs that moved up and down, and walking into it just had the smell of a theatre. I can't explain enough the cultural significance of TC1, because if you stood it alone, it would have had the prestige and lure of any West End theatre. It really was the Wembley Stadium of the BBC. This was where it all happened. If it could talk, TC1 would be able to narrate the story of British entertainment within its four walls, and entering it, you could sense the history. If you want to experience the spirit of entertainment, then TC1 at TV Centre remains the closest tangible thing. The final time I went to TV Centre was in 2011, when I watched a recording of the short-lived panel show, the Matt Lucas Awards. For this, I have a feeling that we were in TC8, which was another iconic studio which had huge cultural significance. Just like entering the British Museum or somewhere with great historical roots, TV Centre never failed to display its many connections with the past. While some modern performers have commented that they were surprised that it didn't make more of their reputation, being a mere mortal, you could never have been under any doubt that you had just stepped foot inside the TV. It was magic. Forget Disneyland, this was my paradise and I loved it. Every time I went, I felt compelled to have my photo taken outside the White Egg Cups, which was a scene synonymous with the beginning of the annual Children in Need extravaganza, when Terry Wogan would stand under the BBC sign and address the nation. To think I was at that exact spot was truly unbelievable. Children of the 70s have the same thing with Noel Edmonds and Swap Shop. This was one of the first programmes to actually go behind the scenes and let the viewer have an insight into the art of programme making. The fact that it was a kids show was irrelevant. It's what it represented. This was coming live from the BBC every Saturday morning for 2 hours. And as soon as it went on air, no one had any control over what Noel was saying. This was television for a new generation. But again, it was only made possible by its location within Television Centre. Nowhere else could cater for presenters who would just walk around the whole building followed by a camera. This was unheard of. But the fact that everything was in one place made this possible. The great Michael Grade once said that an idea could start in the BBC bar and then make its way to the top floor by lunchtime before obtaining a commission before the day was out. Yeah, this might have been an exaggeration, but the fact that everyone was together made the process of creating, commissioning and developing formats much easier. In 1982, following fairly average viewing figures, the BBC sitcom Only Fools and Horses had been put under a question mark about its future. At the end of the series, David Jason, John Sullivan and Ray Butt went to see the head of comedy, Gareth Gwenllian, to inquire whether they would get another series. And Gwenllian just said, yeah, get on with it. This could have only happened because everyone was together in TV Centre, and the management were only ever three floors above the action. So TV Centre allowed this embryonic approach to programme making work. The Centre wasn't just where performers recorded television, they would also use the creative space to both write and rehearse material. Throughout the 70s, a typical day would see both Ronnie's and Morecambe and Wise in adjacent rehearsal rooms doing their stuff, because all of them loved to rehearse in order to get everything perfect for the recording. So they were swapping ideas, stories, material, and adding to the magic of what it was like to be there. Legends of entertainment would find inspiration from just being there and around fellow creative people. If you could bottle this energy, you would have the everlasting formula for a successful light entertainment show. I know everything has to move on and everything is of its time. I'm not saying that we have to regress back to the 70s and live like we only have three channels, but there must have been a spark which made the entertainment output flow like water. The Goodies tried to blow it up on a number of occasions. Spike Milligan tried to start with a jackhammer, and Roy Castle welcomed a lot of children to dance around it. But TV Centre was always a part of what was going on. It was like another character within the show. This was something you never got with Shepperton or Granada. They weren't included in the actual content. But shows that came from TV Centre, well, there was never any doubt where they came from. There seems to be an enigma about the place. You never saw anything about the development of these shows, but when they came out, they always looked so magical. Even now, when I watch repeats of The Generation Game, it doesn't matter that the sets were wobbly or the visual effects left a lot to be desired, because this was pure, unadulterated light entertainment, and it all came from this massive, strange-looking centre. Children in Need and Comic Relief made TV Centre their home for so many years, just because everybody was there and everybody wanted to be there. It was set up for memorable nights of comedy and music. That was its purpose. And now they've gone to Salford in a studio up there, but it's not the same. I've no idea what the outside of Salford studio looks like. I bet it looks like any other corporate building in the concrete jungle. But TV Centre was a thing of beauty. It was where dreams came true, where laughter was made, and more importantly, where British television came into its own. We were proud of the television that came from it because it was the best. Like most of us, when I heard rumours that the BBC was looking to sell TV Centre, I thought, nah, it'll just get overthrown because TV Centre is the BBC. Someone will obviously talk some sense into the people making the decisions. I assumed that the BBC selling TV Centre would be like the FA selling Wembley Stadium. It just wouldn't happen. Us Britons over a certain age, we've got used to our nation not being a world beater at anything. In fact, it's becoming something we accept. But when it comes to TV, we are and always have been up there with the best. Therefore, the decision to close TV Centre in 2013 wasn't simply a call to close a building. I think it was a complete disregard for our cultural heritage. You can say that it doesn't matter, it's only just a building, but this is about so much more than bricks and mortar. This is about our identity, our modern history, and maintaining our high level of entertainment output so we could be world beaters in the international television market. I feel that the changing political landscape doesn't serve cultural affairs very well, and not enough significance is put on the reasoning behind these historical landmarks. It's so easy for committees in Whitehall to make financially influenced decisions which make sense from a political perspective, but completely disregard the cultural significance of their decisions. So, the closure of TV Centre never put an end to programme making, nor did it bring a premature end to anyone's career. So, in that sense, it made little effect to the television landscape of today. In fact, ITV are renting a number of studios, and if you watch This Morning, you can sometimes see the iconic TV Centre frontage in a lot of their outside broadcasts. So entertainment still continues to be made at this legendary landmark. But its status, as the beating heart of British television, has now sadly gone. The hours and hours of laughter, the feats of television entertainment, the stars and shows it spawned. All of it has been consigned to history. But the huge significance and influence which it has over programme making shall last forever. So, that's about it. I hope you enjoy the next month of podcasts. We've got four icons who are synonymous with the history and legacy of the place, which I hope you enjoy. Some of them, I genuinely don't know how I got them and still can't believe that they said yes, because they are legends. And Beyond the Title is so very lucky to be able to have them on. So, I'm now going to do something I never do. I'm going to reveal the first guest who will be the subject of next week's podcast. She's a broadcasting legend, a writer, a respected journalist and broadcaster who is still going strong. It's Joan Bakewell. So that was my thoughts on TV Centre. I hope you can realise how important it was for me to do this podcast, because normally I'm just impartial and leave my guests to give their opinion. Yet I thought this was an issue that I needed to express my passion for, and I really can't wait to get the thoughts of some television icons in the coming weeks. Make sure you look out for my social media updates to see when we're going to post another instalment in this very special series. Thank you, and hopefully see you soon. We'll be back next week with Joan Bakewell.